This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Governor Baker today pleaded with people to do the holidays differently this year.
I'm here today to say that we really can't have them be the kind of consequential event that Thanksgiving has been here in Massachusetts. We really do need the help of everybody to make sure that we don't have a repeat, so that our hospital system can continue to provide the critical medical care that it does so well for those who need it.
It is a whiplash kind of day in this pandemic. The U.S. passed 300,000 dead. Boston, Somerville, Newton, Brockton, Winthrop, they're preparing for a modified rollback. But also, phase one of vaccinations started in earnest today, and the Federal Food and Drug Administration is moving forward on emergency authorization for a second vaccine. Are you confused? Do you need help knowing what to do next? Do you have open questions about the vaccine, the virus, what's safe? We have two doctors here to help us sort it all out, so call us. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. With us is Dr. Shira Doron. She is an infectious disease physician and hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center. And Dr. Benjamin Linus, an infectious disease physician at Boston Medical Center. Drs. Doron, Dr. Linus, welcome back to the show.
Always good to be with you.
Likewise. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So I'm going to start with you, Dr. Doron, because my curiosity, I got to know. I understand that you got the Pfizer vaccine this afternoon as one of the frontline medical workers at Tufts. Literally and figuratively, how did it feel?
Physically or emotionally?
Both. I want to know both.
I know. Well, physically, it felt totally, it was a non-event. It did not, it hurt less than most shots usually seem to, but maybe that's because of the emotions that were running so high. Of course, it helps that I was surrounded by reporters and cameras, so there was that element to it. But it's such an emotional roller coaster to know that we finally have this hope, this light at the end of the tunnel, while at the same time, you know, passing that milestone of over 300,000 dead, and knowing that we're still heading into this long, dark winter with more hospitalizations and deaths ahead of us, it's just unbelievable.
And I just want to ask you briefly before I turn to Dr. Linus. I mean, people are going to want to know what to expect. Did nurses need any special training, or other healthcare providers who are administering the shots, or is this just like any other shot? One gets, bam, in your arm, done.
There's a little bit of extra training, you know, from everything from when it's stored to how it's drawn up and how, you know, how the vial is handled and all of that, and you know, how long it can be out of the refrigerator. And there's a little bit of nuance to it at every single step of the way. None of it is particularly, you know, onerous necessarily. I mean, all in all, it was an uneventful kind of a shot.
And Dr. Linus, I mean, these are first days in administering it here in the Commonwealth, but it has been through trials. So what do we know so far about any side effects?
So we know that side effects from the vaccine are relatively frequent. I mean, a good number of people report small side effects such as sore shoulder, low-grade fever, aches and pains. I think we should be realistic in the messaging about that. Plenty of people, the side effects tend to come with the second dose, which actually is a sign that likely the vaccine is working, because the side effects are the fact that your immune system is reacting because it's already seen the first dose. And so the second dose, we say you're potentiated. Your immune system is ready to go. It sees the vaccine, and that's what causes the pain, the fever, and things like that. I think it's important to message that, right? You might have those symptoms with the second dose. Sometimes they might be bad enough that you feel like you need to stay in bed for a day and maybe even miss some work for a day. That's okay. That doesn't mean you're sick. You're not getting COVID. That's a sign the vaccine is working. But to be ready for that and not to be scared, because those, you know, it can be, I think, uncomfortable from reports. I haven't had the vaccine yet, but I hear it can be uncomfortable. But that's not a sign of badness. That's a sign, if anything, the vaccine is working and you will get better and get out of bed and that it's not COVID.
All right. Now, I have many questions for you, but the phones are blowing up. So I'm going to go straight to callers now. And callers again, Drs. Shira Doron and Benjamin Linus here. Questions about the vaccine, about the current surge, about what's safe. Now is the time. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Sandra on the line from Topsfield. Sandra, what's your question?
Good afternoon. So I hear that there are all these different companies trying to put forth the vaccine. And right now we have the Pfizer vaccine. If I was to get a Pfizer vaccine for vaccine number one, do I have to get a Pfizer vaccine? What if I only have Moderna available at that point in time? Is there a difference?
Thank you, Sandra. And just to clarify for listeners, both the Pfizer and, if it gets approved for, authorized for emergency use, the Moderna vaccine, it's two shots a few weeks apart. So, Dr. Doron, what's your answer to Sandra's question?
Yeah, so the intent is that you get two of the same. And the way it's working in terms of distribution is Massachusetts has been given our first dose of Pfizer vaccine, and in 3 weeks, everyone's second dose will arrive, everyone that got the first dose. So the intent is, and the way it is studied, is you get two doses of the same. If it so happens that by accident somebody gets a second dose of the other, the recommendation from the CDC is that you would be done at that point. It's likely to work, but it should not be the norm.
All right, let's go back to the phones, 800-423-8255. Jackie is on the line from Dorchester. Hi, Jackie, what is your question?
Hello. My question is about traveling while we're having this surge. If my son and his wife, who are quarantining for 2 weeks, travel by car without interacting with anyone from D.C., to Boston, and while they're here, see only my husband and me, who are also quarantining in preparation for their visit, are we at risk of contributing to the surge in cases?
Great question, Jackie. Dr. Linus.
Yeah, I think that's the sort of question of the hour for all of us. I think everyone's struggling with that, including myself now. So in thinking about those questions, I think there's two sort of ways to think about it. The first is, am I assuming risk and will I be sick? And then the second is what you implied in your question, which is what's the responsible thing to do in the middle of an epidemic? What you described sounds realistically like probably low risk in that you're probably not at great danger personally of contracting COVID from that. But I will say that I actually had the reverse plan, sort of planned, coming up to head from Boston down toward D.C. to see my sister. We recently canceled that plan. I'm not saying that that's what everyone has to do, but just so you know, I canceled that plan because ultimately I felt like, look, we know that mobility leads to COVID cases, right? Whatever that mobility might be. And at some level, decreasing mobility decreases the spread of transmission, and that's what we're trying to do right now. So it's a difficult message. I think it's a hard one for people to hear. I understand that when people think through their personal plan and their personal risk, it often seems very low risk. But at the same time, very few people think that they're high risk when they contract COVID. And ultimately, at the end of the day, by limiting mobility, that's what limits the surge. And I really think we should be doing everything we can to limit mobility now.
Anything that you want to add to that, Dr. Doron, before I go back to the phones?
I would just say that, you know, there's a lot of people that are kind of getting up on a soapbox and yelling, don't see family. And I think, you know, the question that was asked is a really good one, because some people will see family and they need to know how to do it safely. It's sort of like preaching abstinence and prevention of HIV. You know, we can provide some guidance for people who really feel the need to see family safely, and quarantining on both ends is one of the things that can add a layer of safety, although it's not perfect. Nothing is.
And Dr. Linus, I'm sorry you're not going to get to see your family, by the way. We so often, we're taking care of our listeners, but, you know, you're a person too. I'm sorry that you're not going to be able to see him.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm sorry to everyone. It's a really hard decision, and I agree with Dr. Doron that standing on a soapbox is definitely not an effective way to make policy and doesn't change people's behavior. And so people are making choices for themselves, and I think that's an important thing. And that people just consider ways that they can reduce their risk if they are seeing a family, because there are things that we can do and those things are important.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to ask your question. Jean is on the line from Winchester. Hi, Jean. What's your question?
Good afternoon. Thank you. My question is around anaphylaxia. I've had anaphylactic reactions about four times in my adult life, not connected to getting any vaccinations, but of unknown cause, usually at a restaurant or some sort of eating situation where there was something in it, in the food, that triggered a trip to the emergency room on four separate occasions. My question is basically, how should I think about getting a vaccine, given that this occurred with some of the participants in the UK with the Pfizer vaccine?
Dr. Jerome.
Yeah, great question. You know, so the what happened in the UK with the two recipients who had what they call anaphylactoid reactions was unexpected, and it led to the recommendation that people who have had anaphylaxis to a vaccine, who are allergic to the known components of this vaccine, or who have had anaphylaxis to injectable medications should avoid this vaccine at this time. But we're going to learn so much just over the next few weeks as so many people hopefully are vaccinated with this Pfizer vaccine and then the Moderna vaccine hopefully, that recommendation might change and it may actually loosen up again. And so depending on where you are on sort of the priority list, by the time it gets to you, it's likely that we'll have a lot more information and a better answer to your question about whether you are safe or should avoid this particular vaccine.
All right, the calls just keep flowing in. We've got Alex on the line from Duxbury. Alex, go ahead.
Hi. My wife and I are planning on getting pregnant very soon, and we are wondering if we should wait, what the plan is for vaccinating pregnant people. Should we, you know, I mean, is it advisable to get the vaccine while she's pregnant, get it beforehand? You know, all that kind of thing.
Yep.
And to make things a little more complicated, we have recently lost a baby in the third trimester, so we're just literally getting to the point where we can start trying again.
Alex, I'm sorry. Let's see if we can get your question answered. Dr. Linus.
So, great question, really important question. It makes me nervous to start offering you personal medical advice like that over the phone on the radio. I really think that you should contact your obstetrician to make those decisions together. Because once you're starting to talk about, I feel like that question is effectively like this is your life and that is your wife and you're really seeking medical opinion. And so I actually don't feel super comfortable telling you what to do over the radio, unfortunately.
Thank you for that clarification, Dr. Linus, and it is important. It's really important that we're clear about that. I will then ask you a follow-up question, which is, as I understand it, we did not have pregnant participants in the vaccine trials. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And also, I think that this is true generally in new pharmaceuticals, vaccines, technologies. They're often not tested first in pregnant people or, for that matter, children. And so we don't have data. You can understand why those are high stakes trials for pharmaceutical companies. And so they'd like to take the easy question first. And the bulk of the population is not a child or a pregnant. However, then we're left with these urgent populations that don't have data. And this is a common space that we find ourselves where we're seeking data for pregnant people, for pregnant women and also for children. Those trials will be coming, but they don't help this week while people are making decisions.
Thanks for that clarification, too. Let's go to Barnabas now in Wellesley. Barnabas, what's your question?
Hey, thanks, guys. So the first thing I wanted to ask was about the vaccine protecting us from future strains. How long is this going to be effective for? Will we need to retake new strains to protect from new strains every year with genetic mutations of the virus? And then I was just also wondering if there's physical externalities of healthy social interaction at holiday time that maybe outweigh the risks from coronavirus on a macro level.
All right, so those are two different questions. I'm going to break them down and I'm going to turn to Dr. Durone for the vaccine question, this idea of, you know, will the coronavirus mutate and require new vaccine development the way, as I understand it, the flu does, Dr. Durone.
Right. So whereas we do know that there has been some slow mutation of the virus out as it circulates in the community, there are different strains, and that's to be expected with any virus, any organism, really. What we also know is that it's a very slow kind of mutation and not one that would be expected to affect the efficacy of the vaccine. And so while we're all very familiar with the flu shot, and we know that we have to get it every year and that the vaccine changes from year to year because the flu mutates, the flu is pretty unique in that way, and we don't expect this coronavirus to do that. We don't expect there to be a need for a new vaccine every year. However, we also just don't know how long the immunity will last from this vaccine. So we may need boosters with the same vaccine, perhaps once a year, perhaps more, perhaps less, but we don't expect to have to recreate the vaccine every year.
And Dr. Linus Barnabas's other question was something that has come up so often over the last several months, which is, you know, there are mental health implications for being isolated from your loved ones. There are social, emotional well-being questions with what we are going through. And even in, if you want to use the word normal times, we rely on the holidays to recharge themselves by being with loved ones and in community. So how do we think about these trade-offs as Governor Baker today pleads with us to celebrate our holidays with our immediate household members only?
Yeah, I think it's incredibly challenging. And I think that right beyond the holidays, those trade-offs are part of the conversation of the epidemic from the very, very beginning, right? There's always sort of a trade-off. If there were no trade-offs, the answer would be everyone should stay in the basement for the last 10 months, right? Then we would minimize transmission. But obviously that's not possible. And there are other agendas out there that we have to sort of weigh with limiting transmission. So, and I think mental health is a really important one. That's a real thing. And people get, right, people become ill with mental health disorders, and that can be every bit or even more crippling than COVID in some cases. So I think that's true. I don't have the precise answer for that. I don't think anyone does about how to balance those two concerns. I think it's legitimate to be thinking about mental health. I think it's hopeful and provides optimism that perhaps with the vaccine now actually present and starting to be used, that we're going into the next phase of this where there actually is light at the end of the tunnel, and this is not an indefinite stay at home or indefinite closure. I think we can start to imagine a future where we've gotten through this, or at least the bulk of the pandemic. And if that requires a little bit more time on Zoom, I hope that people that can will lean into that and use Zoom and see their loved ones and just hope for the future that's coming. But I understand that there might be circumstances in which really mental health is an overwhelming concern. And in that case, I think that you can never have absolutist policies, right? There always have to be reasons to seek a middle ground. And that might be one of them at times.
Let's go back to the phones. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Doctors Shira Doron and Benjamin Linus are spending their time answering your coronavirus and vaccine questions today. Let's take a couple here. We've got Kathy on the line from Spencer, Massachusetts. Kathy, go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
What's your question, Kathy?
I'm in my 70s, and I have a severe pernicious anemia, which is my body doesn't absorb any kind of vitamin B12 or anything like that, so I have to inject once a month. But I was just wondering how the reaction would be with the vaccine, like if you possibly know if there would be any kind of reaction from being anemic.
We'll find out for you, Kathy, and I'm going to add one more question to this, and we'll turn back to the doctors. We've got Marlene on the line from the South End. Marlene, go ahead.
Hi, I am currently 73. At age 12, I had Guillain-Barré, and I want to know if it is okay to take the vaccine or not. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for that question too, Marlene. So Dr. Doron, again, I know these are early days. We have information from the trials. We're really literally just like a little more than 24 hours into administering this vaccine here in the Commonwealth. Do we know about issues having to do with anemia and B12 deficiency or having had Guillain-Barré?
Yeah, I mean, what we know so far is that in terms of people more or less likely to have adverse events or side effects, People who are younger and healthier are actually more likely to have the more robust side effects of that, that Dr. Linus described, the immune response, which isn't actually a dangerous thing. And so that's kind of all we know about the difference in people in terms of likelihood to have side effects. And so, I think someone with anemia would certainly be perfectly, on the list for receiving the vaccine and no reason to think that they would have any dangerous effects from it. What we are also learning is that Guillain-Barré doesn't appear to be associated with COVID, and so it's not likely to be associated with the vaccine. A study just came out from the UK showing that over the course of the last year, rates of Guillain-Barré were actually a little bit lower than in a normal year, probably because other viruses are being mitigated by our COVID mitigation measures like masks and distancing. So we don't expect to see Guillain-Barré associated with the vaccine.
Thank you for those. I'm going to go straight back to the phone. So many calls. We've got Lorena in Watertown. Lorena, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. A two-part question. Is the medical field all being directed to tell the patients when they get the vaccine to continue to wear PPE and continue to social distance because they will still be able to contract the virus and possibly spread it? That's what the doctors are saying on all the major news networks on TV. It's just, I'm wondering why that it's not being said that frequently and kind of going over everyone's heads.
So, Lorena, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I thought you were going to start your second question, and I don't want you to ask your second question because your first one's so important that I want to go back to Dr. Linus and address that. The dual issue of the necessity of masking up and keeping social distancing now and what the vaccine does and does not protect you and others against.
Sure. So I want to start with that second part because I think that that's a really important point to make. Like I've seen this discussion in the national news and in various news outlets. I don't think it's the right conclusion to say that we know that the vaccine does not protect, right? It's not correct to say the vaccine can't protect you from infection and that you might be able to spread it. What's happening is that the endpoint of the clinical trials was severe COVID-19 disease, right, which is the thing that we're trying to prevent. And so that is the outcome. And that's the thing that we say the vaccine prevented 95%. Right, but what we didn't technically demonstrate was that it decreases the rates of actual infection, right? And so there's a theoretical possibility that perhaps people are still being infected, they're just not getting sick, right? But the fact that we don't know for sure doesn't mean that it's true. It's just that we didn't study it in that way. And so people are hedging a bit to try, right? It's true, we don't formally know that the vaccine prevents transmission. What we know is it prevents people getting sick. But I don't, right, it's not, you shouldn't take the next step to say, therefore, it's true that people are still getting infected. That being said, we are still telling people to wear PPE for a variety of reasons. One is that. Another is that not everyone's going to be vaccinated right away. A third is that I think it's important while we're still in a period where many people are not vaccinated, that everybody is still adhering to the policy of social distancing and wearing and masks and face coverings so that we continue at a population level to have that kind of participation in our transmission control. Right? If people stop wearing masks and the message gets out that it's no longer important, we could see surge because not everyone's vaccinated yet. So don't, right, I think it's probably not the right conclusion to say the vaccine doesn't protect you from infection. It's fair to say it's not a slam dunk, right? And that's why people are being a little bit careful about the way that we talk about it.
So we're not going to take more calls now, but Dr. Daron, I'm going to turn back to you in our last 2 minutes or so. We did have one caller who wanted to ask, do we know yet what the process, when we get to phase three and this vaccine is widely available to the general population, do we know how that's going to work? Like, will you call your general practitioner or your doctor and get an appointment, or can you just go into a minute clinic? What do we know, or do we know those process details for phase three?
I don't think we know exactly, but I think what we can anticipate is that vaccine will be available in as many places as possible to get it into as many arms as possible, as quickly as possible. That's the goal. That's the federal government's goal. That's the state's goal. And so that's what I hope we will see, hopefully by mid-spring.
Okay. And Dr. Linus, any last thoughts for listeners who may still be feeling anxious about the safety and their well-being in taking this vaccine?
Sure, absolutely. I think that I will be taking that vaccine. I'm looking forward to the day that my kids and my wife can take that vaccine. More than 70,000 people have taken the vaccine, and it's been proven to be quite effective and safe. This is the same process that we use to evaluate all new medications and all new vaccines, and we're in the middle of an epidemic, so the stakes are quite high. So I feel confident that, right, this is why we do all this science, and these are the benefits of knowing how to do evaluations and how to look for the signal of danger and all the things that we've learned how to do over the decades of evaluating new medicines. We should take advantage of that, right? We're able to do that, and we've done it. And I think that I understand the anxiety. It's a brand new thing, but I want to be reassuring that, right, those of us, I'll put my family out there. And I guess that's the best I can say to make it clear that I really believe that.
Well, that is Dr. Benjamin Linus, an infectious disease physician at Boston Medical Center, and Dr. Shira Derone, an infectious disease physician and hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center. Thank you so much to both of you for spending your time with us today.
My pleasure. Take care.
Thank you.